Wish You a Merry Christmas, in an arrangement by John Rutter. It was played by the Philip Jones Brass Ensemble. Sunday Morning was presented by James Jolly, and it was a unique production for BBC Radio 3, with studio production today by Lyndon Jones. Well, this is BBC Radio 3, just coming up to midday, and it's time for Private Passions. This week, Michael Barclay's guest is the Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby.
For this special Christmas edition of Private Passions, I've been invited to Lambeth Palace, and I'm right at the heart of the palace now, in a sitting room overlooking the garden on a chilly winter afternoon. I can't help feeling, Archbishop Justin, that this sequence in your life, you know, working in the oil industry, being Dean at Liverpool, Bishop at Durham, and now Archbishop of Canterbury, it must be almost surreal to have trodden this path so fast.
I don't know about fast, but it certainly is surreal. I'm still at the stage where I'll sit down in a service and flick through the service sheet as one does before it begins and see that the preacher's the Archbishop of Canterbury and think, oh, that's good, that might be quite interesting. And then think, oh no, it probably won't be.
Well, your route here has, Justin, been highly unusual. I mean, you're a bishop for only a year, and you're 36 when, I think to use your words, you heard the call. And so I wonder how you became aware of God's voice. What was it that actually made you change the course of your life?
It was in the context of a service, an evening service, at a church called Holy Trinity Brompton in London, and very, and not a long way from choral evensong, it would be safe to say. And someone was preaching and telling of his own story, of his own call, and as I listened to it, there was an extraordinary, powerful, almost audible inner resonance that made me feel that this was something that I had to think and pray about very carefully.
We'll come on to the way in which you've managed already, I think, to marry, if you like, aspects of your previous life and the sort of reality that that brings to your work in the church now. But since this is Christmas, we ought to start with a carol. And I know there's one you particularly like, but partially because there's a verse that's almost always left out. And perhaps you would explain why it's important to you and read it for us.
Yes, thank you. The carol is O Little Town of Bethlehem. The verse that's usually left out goes like this. Where children pure and happy pray to the blessed child, where misery cries out to thee, son of the mother mild, where charity stands watching and faith holds wide the door, the dark night wakes, the glory breaks, and Christmas comes once more. And the reason that I love that verse and always object to it being left out is its austere reality. It links in to both the reality of Bethlehem over the centuries at many times. I've been in Bethlehem twice for Christmas, once over the Western Christmas on 25th December and the other for the Eastern Christmas on the 6th of January. And it's a tough place. It's been in the middle of conflict for a long time. And that reality gets away from the saccharine nature that sometimes affects Christmas.
Well, we found it quite hard, for the very reason that you've just said, that most people omit it, to find a version that actually includes it. But as part of our Christmas present to you, we have succeeded.
Thank you.
Yeah.
the choir of Ely Cathedral, directed by Paul Trepter, and with Scott Farrell playing the organ, singing one of the favourite carols of my guest today, the Archbishop of Canterbury. Christmas, Justin, is a time that brings lots of memories, and for many people, not all of them happy. And I think for you, your childhood memories of Christmas were rather mixed.
They were certainly mixed. There were some wonderfully happy Christmases, which I can remember. And there were some very, very empty ones that I can remember. I think I remember one particularly where I was with my father at the time, and he was not very well, and he didn't stir out of bed all day, and I sat by the window and watched things go by and tried to find something in the fridge. So, I mean, that wasn't a particularly happy Christmas.
One thing that you have spoken about, and I must say it's very hard not to be very conscious about it in today's age, is the way that materialism takes over Christmas, and we perhaps forget not just about the people who are not having such a wonderful time, which is a very important part of the sort of Christian message, but what it's really all about.
Yes, there's a great danger of playing Scrooge here, isn't there? Bar humbug stuff. And I do try and avoid that. Christmas is a great time for celebrations. I love parties. It's a wonderful time for a party. What you don't want is to set standards that if the party isn't of such a success and the presents are so overwhelming that Christmas is a failure. Christmas is fun because of the people you're with. And the chaos and the mess and the noise and the faffing about. And it's all, that's good. You don't have to go over the top to do it and leave yourself with a financial hangover that lasts you for the rest of the year. And we're quite, you know, having been on clergy stipend for a long time, we've always been quite careful about that.
But your five children will still have a good time.
Oh, five children and loads of others. I can't remember. I think we're 14 for Christmas this year. It'll be a riot.
Has music been, either in the context of the church or outside the context of the church, has it been something that you turn to that actually gives you succour in a way?
What music does for me is recall memory. It takes me to places and it brings out the emotions that I had when I was taken to places. So when you were playing Little Town of Bethlehem just now, I could feel the sense of my parish church on Christmas Eve. Cold and but full. I could see in my mind's eye the choir at Liverpool Cathedral, this awesome, magnificent building. That's what music does for me. It stirs memories, and I will play music. I'm not as adventurous as I should be. I need to be introduced to things, but I play music to bring me to a certain place that I want to be. And it's incredibly important from that point of view.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned the feeling of space, of a cathedral, for example, because we're going to hear two pieces that you've chosen by Thomas Tallis. And I think if anybody manages to summon up a marvellous sense of architecture, or almost of flying buttresses, if you like, it's this music. What does it say to you?
Again, I love the... It's not simple music by any means, but the austerity of the music. You're forced into a certain space by it. You have to focus and to listen and to think and reflect. It doesn't take you out of yourself. It seems to me it takes you, and particularly the words accompanying it, take one into a place before God where things are put in right perspective.
Oh.
famous Talis canon, God grant with grace. And before that, we heard his Miserere Nostri Domine, performed by Chapelle du Roi, conducted by Alistair Dixon. Those words from God grant with grace were from the Psalter of Archbishop Parker, Elizabeth I's first Archbishop of Canterbury. So, and you must feel an extraordinary sense of history here in Lambeth Palace and a connection to Archbishop Parker and the other 104 Archbishops of Canterbury who came before you. Do you ever have a sense of their presence, or was it like a completely different age, do you think?
No, quite the reverse. I'm always lost for words as to how to express what a sense there is of this continuity. When you think that this office has existed since the 6th century, long before the state existed, and has existed more or less continually over that time. There's also the strange thing in this building of, you know, particularly after a bad day when you're walking down the corridor past the endless portraits of dead predecessors. And it feels a bit like Hogwarts and Harry Potter. You know, you sort of hear them sneering at you and thinking, my goodness, what have we got here now?
And will I end up there one day?
Well, yes, absolutely. History falls out of the walls here. Mm-hmm. I go up and down stairs at one end of the flat we live in. I go up and down stairs, which Cramer walked up and down. Parker, I mean, you go on and on. It is a very remarkable place.
I can't help wondering what Archbishop Parker would have made of the problems that you inherited in the Anglican Church.
Well, I don't think they're as difficult as the ones he inherited. I mean, remember where he came in just after the great struggles of the 1550s, having to try and settle a church that was really in huge turmoil. And at a time when foreign war threatened, when to get it wrong meant your death. Mine is merely execution by the daily newspapers.
We'll try and avoid that. Indeed, your predecessor, Rowan Williams, said that you would need the constitution of an ox and the skin of a rhinoceros. I wonder what kind of beast you feel you've become.
I think compared to Rowan, I'm probably a tortoise. I go along at a steady, slow pace. I don't have that. He's one of the people I admire most in his writing, in his speaking, his poetry. I'm learning to use the shell a bit, but it will take a bit of practice.
Yes. And you can take comfort from the fact that I recall the tortoise did rather well in the end.
Yes, I wasn't comparing him to being a hare before anyone said anything.
Now, one of your other predecessors before that, Lord Carey, recently said that Christianity is just a generation away from extinction. Do you worry about that in the middle of the night?
No, not at all. Partly because he didn't actually say it. He was misquoted, and I know what he did say. Partly because actually so is the whole human race, funnily enough. Mm. He's often said it, and what he's talking about, and I entirely agree with, is that Christianity involves sharing and living out the good news of Jesus Christ so as to draw other people to faith. And if we don't do that, we stop. It's very simple. But no, that sort of thing, that's God's problem. It's above my pay grade.
Do you think possibly, and this brings us on to that subject you've actually been speaking about quite a lot, to do with money, and that in fact we all become so completely obsessed with our own sense of importance, our own sense of wealth, if you like, that we forget quite how irrelevant we are in the scheme of things in some ways. Not irrelevant to God, but irrelevant in terms of how little we each are.
I suppose, once again, I think I'd put it the other way up. We forget how immensely valuable we are. The money drowns out our value, because our value in Christian belief is the life of God's Son on the cross for each one of us. Because what that says is every human being, regardless of wealth or poverty or any other factor at all, is of infinite value.
You came across the reverse of wealth a lot when you were in Africa. Africa's been terribly important to you, hasn't it?
It has, very much so, yes.
And did you get from that a sense of what it is not to have, if you like?
Yes, very much so. I first went to Africa in 1974, to Kenya, and I've gone more often than I can count since, and I go very frequently in connection with church things, and I've worked there a lot on conflict, dealing with issues of conflict. And particularly in areas of conflict, you see the most absolute poverty, the total taking away of everything that someone has, except perhaps, and sometimes even including the clothes they stand up in. And what is extraordinary is the capacity of human beings to reform community. I mean, I remember in a refugee camp in East Africa at one point where people, 25,000 people who'd just been displaced, first thing they did was organize some local leadership and form a school with 200 people in a class sitting in the open with one textbook, which is all that someone had salvaged. But they started forming community, and you saw in absolute poverty the recreation of something of value. It was shattering.
And it's always very touching seeing people wherever in the world singing in choirs, coming together to make harmony, if you like. But somewhere like that, it's doubly so, isn't it?
It is doubly so, and they were doing that as well. They were getting together and singing and dancing. And music was beginning to build that community they were re-seeking.
You've got a rather charming example from Nigeria, an African children's choir singing.
You hear the voice of Africa in this. Walking through African towns at night, places like Lagos or somewhere like that, certainly when you're in the more crowded areas, and you hear the music everywhere, different music all over the place, of African music, of European music, of a melange, a sort of wonderful mixture of music. It's extraordinary.
So we've got Betelhemu, which actually is a wonderful marriage for what you've just been saying. Unquestionably the sound of Africa, and yet children singing about Bethlehem and the birth of Jesus.
Indeed.
Oh,
the African Children's Choir singing Betelemu, a Nigerian Christmas carol chosen by my guest today, Justin Welby. And all of the details of the music are on the Private Passions page of the Radio 3 website. Now, another place, Justin, which has profoundly influenced you, I think, is Coventry and Coventry Cathedral, because that's where you began as a priest.
I was ordained there, and then I was in parishes, and I ended up working at Coventry Cathedral for 5 years, yes.
And, of course, that is an extraordinary story, isn't it, of death and resurrection, if you like, in architecture and spirit.
It's the most breathtaking building. I mean, destroyed in November 1940, and the provost of the cathedral marking on the wall, Father, forgive, and not Father, forgive them, very, very consciously. And then rebuilt in 1962 next to the ruins, Basil Spence's leap of imagination, completely different from anything seen before, which he had in 15 minutes. He scribbled the original design on the back of an envelope as he walked around, and that's recognisably what he ended up with, sort of inspiration. And that, with some of the greatest religious art of the 20th century, I mean, the whole thing is staggering. Every stone and angle speaks to you of the Christian vision and of the vision of peace and reconciliation.
You're no stranger to dark times. You lost your first child when she was a baby in a car accident. And I wonder what you say to people who have suffered greatly and who feel rage, anger, if you like, find it very difficult to accept that there can be a God who can do this kind of thing, as it were.
It's all around that God is in the middle of it. Certainly when we lost Joanna, and in great crises since, which there have been a reasonable number, actually, that what we have found is the presence of God, not putting everything right, but in the middle of it. My wife, Caroline, often quotes from the Psalms about God stores up our tears in a bottle. No tear is left, is lost.
So, in fact, you actually managed to gain something that was nourishing from your faith, rather than, in a sense, feeling let down.
Oh, yes, faith is never an insurance policy. The Bishop of London a few years ago, rather typical Bishop of London style, he's one of the great bishops, he said it in a confirmation service, "So now you're becoming Christians, you may have had a difficult life, I can promise you it will get more difficult." You know, faith is not an insurance policy, it's a walk, it's a relationship with Jesus Christ, through good and ill, and often through ill.
Both faith and darkness have led to great pieces of music and great works of art. And of course the bombing of Coventry Cathedral led to the Britain War Requiem.
Indeed, which is possibly my favourite bit of music anywhere.
Yes, and it has, like all great requiems, the Verdi, for example, an almost operatic view of the Dies Irae, the Day of Wrath.
Yes, it does, and hugely powerful. Thank you.
Music from Britain's War Requiem, the original recording with the composer himself conducting the London Symphony Orchestra and Chorus, the Melos Ensemble and the Bach Choir, and we also heard the baritone Dietrich Fischer-Dieskau. Justin, how do you feel two of the things that I know have been very important to you come together in your life, the Benedictine order and the charismatic evangelical?
I think they're complementary. The charismatic evangelical is about the grandeur and also the immanence, the presence of God, his closeness, the way he speaks to us, he empowers us, he equips us, he calls us and directs us. And the Benedictine has the contemplative, which takes us before him in awe and wonder. And there are two wings of spirituality that keep everything flying.
The Benedictine order actually provided the text for this next piece, which you helped choose, and we have to say that it was specially written for your enthronement.
It was written for my enthronement. It was commissioned by my mother and stepfather from a composer called Michael Barclay, I think I'm right in saying. And it was performed at my enthronement. It actually is some of the opening words of the rule of St. Benedict, early 6th century. And the way it was set out is, listen, listen, O my child, listen, listen carefully. Listen, listen, O my child, to your teacher's guidance and incline the ear of your heart. Receive willingly and carry out effectively your loving father's advice. Listen, listen, O my child. Listen, listen carefully. The heart of Benedictine spirituality is what Benedict calls a school, the school of walking with Christ, closer and closer to him through our lives, in attentive listening to his voice.
Thank you.
It was wonderful to hear that piece of music composed for my installation as Archbishop at Canterbury Cathedral. It brings to mind the great stillness that settled in the cathedral as the last notes of that drifted away, as people's hearts have been lifted by beauty and drawn into the presence of God through the music.
And lovely, from my point of view, that some new music came into the service, because new music's important for the church.
That is absolutely true. And what is most striking is there is more new music being commissioned now, particularly by cathedrals, than in living memory. New art and new music. There's a whole flourishing of the arts which speaks of the activity of God.
Of course, it was a magnificent occasion. But in one sense, I think you always like to slightly prick the balloon of pomposity, and you had those wonderful African dancers, I shall never forget, coming down.
Frititi.
Yes, it was a wonderful smile upon all of the prelates assembled, who I don't think were necessarily familiar with this sight. But they played the drums, and it was an uplifting moment, wasn't it?
It was the gospel procession. Mm. They accompanied the gospel book down for the reading of the gospel, and the whole place took off.
Well, now, the next music is something I think is of use to you when there is, you need perhaps just to relax. And it came about, you used to listen to it, I think, when you were feeling anxious and a bit stretched. Tell us all about it.
Well, it was. This was a piece that used to be played in sort of common rooms at school. So it's getting on a bit now, 1970. And everyone was playing Bridge Over Troubled Water, which was fine. And then everyone would sort of wander off when this started playing. And it was, again, it was the combination of the lyrics and the music, the reality of life, I think. I felt this spoke to me of the reality of life. And there's just a slight touch of hope in the last line.
Just a poor boy, though my story is seldom told. I have squandered my resistance for a pocket full of mumbles, such are promises. All lies and jest, still a man hears what he wants to hear and disregards the rest. No more than a boy in the company of strangers, in the quiet of the railway station when I'm scared. Laying low, seeking out the poor quarters where the ragged people go, looking for the places only they would know. Lie-la-lie, lie-la-lie-lie, lie-la-lie, lie-la-lie. Asking only workmen's wages, I come looking for a job, but I get no offers. Just to come home from the wars on 7th Avenue. I do declare there were times when I was so lonesome, I took some comfort there. La 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 la. Then I'm laying out my winter clothes and wishing I was gone, going home, where the New York City winters are bleeding me. Thank you. stands a boxer and a fighter by his trade, and he carries the reminders of every glove that laid him down or cut him till he cried out in his anger and his shame, I am leaving, I am leaving, but the fighter still remains.
It was a great album, actually, wasn't it? I mean, all the songs on that album are pretty good, but that one, does it still bring back memories of the sort of loneliness of the boy who is still learning about being an adult?
Yes, it does bring that back, and it also brings back the loneliness of being in a crowded boarding school where you had to be very self-sufficient.
How will your Christmas day unfold?
Oh, what a question. I don't know. It's my first Christmas at Canterbury. So I think it will start probably with a service in a hospital or a hospice. Then we'll go on to the cathedral, and there's a massive service there where the BBC will turn up and all that kind of thing, and that'll be wonderful. I'm looking forward to that. Then I'll see various people and we'll probably go for a walk, and then we tend to have a family meal in the late afternoon, early evening, and then sort of stagger in a state of complete exhaustion because I'll have been at a midnight communion the previous night, but with a huge sense of enjoyment to bed.
And this being Christmas, I think you'd like to end with the Christmas oratorio, Johann Sebastian Bach.
Indeed, I would.
Well, there's another nice aspect to this, because although this is a brand new recording, and one I hope you'll like, it actually comes from the choir of your old college, Trinity College, Cambridge.
I think that's wonderful.
So we'll play out, if we may, with the Christmas oratorio, and may I thank you very much, Justin, for contributing to our Christmas on Radio 3, and from all our listeners, wish you a very happy Christmas.
And to them as well.
hüteten des Nachts ihre Herde, und siehe, des Herren Engel trat zu ihnen, und die Klarheit des Herren leuchtet um sie, und sie furchten sich sehr.
Music from Bach's Christmas Oratorio, ending that edition of Private Passions, performed by the choir of Trinity College, Cambridge, and the Orchestra of the Age of Enlightenment, with the soloist James Gilchrist, all conducted by Stephen Layton. And if you missed any of the programme, you might like to know that you can download it now. Just go to the Private Passions page of the Radio 3 website and follow the links. Private Passions was presented by Michael Barclay and produced by Jane Greenwood. It was a Loftus production for BBC Radio 3. And next week, Michael's guest is the South African jazz musician Hugh Masekela, who wrote Bring Him Back Home, the song which became an anthem for the movement to free Nelson Mandela.
Christmas Day on BBC Radio 3. At noon, Composer of the Week explores a crucial day in the life of one Ludwig van Beethoven.
He introduced, for the first time, his fifth and sixth symphonies, his fourth piano concerto and the choral fantasy.
Christmas carols and readings from the candlelit chapel of King's College, Cambridge at 2 o'clock. Sean Rafferty at home with conductor Sir John Elliott Gardner at 4:30. And the 2013 BBC Proms Revisited. John Wilson's Bank Holiday Hollywood Rhapsody Prom at 7. And Vivaldi's Four Seasons from Nigel Kennedy at 9:30. Join us for Christmas on BBC Radio 3.
This is BBC Radio 3, 90 to 93 FM, on digital radio and online. It's just gone 1 o'clock, and this is David Cornett with a summary of the news. The body of a doctor from London who died in detention in Syria has been brought back to Britain. Abbas Khan, an orthopaedic surgeon, was found dead just days before he was due to be released. His body will be taken from Heathrow to the coroner's office in East London, where a post-mortem examination will be conducted. The Syrian government says he killed himself in his cell, but his family is convinced he was murdered. Mr. Khan went to Syria last year to work in a field hospital in a rebel-controlled area. The former Russian oil tycoon Mikhail Khodorkovsky, who was pardoned and then released from prison in Russia on Friday, has said he will not enter politics. Speaking from Berlin, he also said he did not intend to fight for the return of billions of pounds worth of his former assets. Police in Bangladesh have charged 13 people in connection with the fire in a garment factory that killed 111 workers more than a year ago. They include the owner and the manager of the factory. They've been charged with causing death through negligence. A court in the Egyptian capital Cairo has sentenced three activists to 3 years each in prison for their roles in recent demonstrations. The men are leading figures in the protest movement that triggered the 2011 uprising. A car bomb has killed at least seven people at an army checkpoint near Libya's second city, Benghazi. It appears to be the first suicide attack in Libya, marking a shift in tactics in the battle fought by Islamist militias against the army and police. A special team from Scotland Yard is to examine all the evidence following the court case in which the celebrity cook, Nigella Lawson, confessed that she'd taken cocaine. Officers had originally said they wouldn't take any action against the TV chef. And the weather, it'll be a breezy day with some bright or sunny spells and blustery showers, most frequent towards the west. A cold night will follow with frost in places and also the risk of some ice patches where any showers fall onto frozen surfaces. BBC News and Weather at approaching 3 minutes past one. And it's time now here on BBC Radio 3 for Christmas Around Europe with Louise Fryer.
Thanks, David. Well, for me, Christmas always comes earlier in the shape of the European Broadcasting Union's special day of Christmas music. In a couple of minutes here on Radio 3, we'll be joining listeners around Europe for concerts from Helsinki, Tallinn, Prague, Munich, Budapest and Antwerp, and taking a break for choral evensong from Southminster along the way. Between now and 8:15 this evening, we'll be covering not only a wide geographical range, but a spread of repertoire too, all with Christmas in mind. And to get us in a festive mood, here's the BBC singers. Good Christian Folk, the BBC singers, conducted by Brian Kay. Well, it's very nearly time to go live to Helsinki for a concert by Lumen Valo, one of the leading Nordic vocal ensembles for women, for men, whose name literally means the glow of snow. And it's traditional for this Finnish concert to begin with the bells of Kallio Church.
Hyvät radion kuuntelijat eri puolilla Eurooppaa ja Pohjois-Amerikkaa.
The Finnish presenter begins by wishing all of us good afternoon, including listeners across Europe and North America, and the audience in Kallio Church in the centre of Helsinki for the 19th time. The church is an impressive granite building built in 1912, its tall tower topped by a copper dome and cross. Performing this year at this Christmas concert is Lumen Valo, a Finnish vocal ensemble currently celebrating its 20th anniversary. Right from the beginning, this group of eight singers has focused on performing and promoting unaccompanied music of the Renaissance, although more recently it's extended its repertory in both directions, encompassing music of the Middle Ages, the Baroque and the present day. We begin our Christmas concert with an arrangement by Johann von Gardner of the Nativity of Christ ex Apostolarian. It's followed by In Dulce Jubilo in an arrangement by Robert Pearsall and Omanium Mysterium by Giovanni Gabrieli. The two works have often been sung one after the other at Lumen Valo concerts, Pearsall's sparkling score contrasting with Gabrieli's more somber tone.
Nämä kaksi viimeistä laulua ovat usein olleet Lumen Valon konserteissa parina peräkkäin, Pearsall kimmeltävänä ja Gabrieli tummempana vastapuolina. Lumen Valo, olkaa hyvä.